Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix with Rod Bryant and Jerry Gordon here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the Matrix.
And it is a wonderful day to be listening to Beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant, along with my amazing producer, if you're watching on YouTube, at Nativ, N-E-T-I-V online. My producer, Jerry Gordon, sitting there all polished up and ready to go. We have a great show lined up for you. A guest that has been on this show several times, and I'm going to let Jerry do the introduction.
Ken Timmerman is a long-term friend of this program. We've had him on several times. I've known him, my God, since 1996. And basically, he is a well-published New York Times bestselling author and intrepid investigative journalist. He's actually spent a month in a PLO prison in Beirut, of all things, the thing we're going to be talking about today. His latest book is the fastest read about hijacking elections. This one concerns the upcoming November 2020 election. It's called The Election Heist. And Google that name and you can find the book, which is just published yesterday.
Right.
It's all on Amazon and a number of host of outlets.
The interesting thing, Jerry, is this is a fiction, a fictional work. But right. The research has gone into this book really does point out the vulnerability of our election system, the way it's run, the electronic system, and also the paper ballot issues. There's some revelations to be had about not only Beirut and the explosion in Beirut, but also election heists. So
the Beirut blast is all about how Iran and its Hezbollah thugs have controlled Lebanon for decades. And this latest episode is dangerous because it indicates that basically Hezbollah is believing to develop rockets underneath the port of Beirut.
And also, we're going to throw in that this could have a very positive turnaround if the people get a stomach full of this. Maybe they could kick Hezbollah in Iran out of Lebanon, we hope anyway. Jerry, thanks so much. We've got a great show lined up for you guys, so don't go away, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
As we promised you in the introduction of the show, we have our very special guest. We always really appreciate the time. It's a lot of fun to talk to and to banter back and forth. It is the amazing Mr. Ken Timmerman. And we have a lot of things to discuss, to include the brand new book that is out called The Election Heist. We were talking about it in the pre-show the beginning of the pre-show. And I told you, it's as much as I bristle at the idea, I am still very disturbed that this is possible. And we can maybe pick this up later on if you want to toward the end of the show, because I most definitely would like to get this book into people's hands, because this whole idea is not just a fantasy. You're writing, even though it's a fiction, it has some very serious overtones. Jerry, go ahead.
Ken, there's been a big blast in Beirut, a place you know only too well.
Right.
And the question is, are our friends, if you want to call them that, Hezbollah behind us somehow?
Well, Well, I think the look, this enormous blast in Beirut, it is the largest non-nuclear explosion in history. We used to say that about the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut in October of 1983. Remember, I was there not when the barracks went up, but I was there the week before and the week afterwards. I was in Lebanon that whole time period. We used to say that of the 1983 attack. This is probably 10 times bigger than the Marine barracks blast. 2,800 and something tons of ammonium nitrate. And importantly, it's not the fertilizer grade nitrate. It is the explosive grade ammonium nitrate. So this was basically the equivalent of thousands of tons of TNT. Remember, Hiroshima was 20,000 tons of TNT. This was about one, I think the estimates I've seen, this was about 1/15 the size of Hiroshima. And just think of that for a second. And then look at those pictures that you see of Beirut. Now, you asked me about Hezbollah. How about Iran? Let's start with Iran. Because whenever you say Hezbollah, you've got to say Iran, because there is no Hezbollah in Beirut, in without Lebanon, Iran. Without Iran. Okay, they are symbiotic. They are one and the same. The reports that I've seen suggest a number of things. Number one, the person who actually controlled the port in Beirut is the brother-in-law of the Hezbollah leader. Okay, it's the husband of Nasrallah's sister. Okay, his brother-in-law is in control of the port. He is not the person who was arrested, by the way, by authorities. That was the titular port director, but Nasrallah's brother-in-law was not arrested. Number two, there have been persistent rumors of Hezbollah siphoning away several tons of this ammonium nitrate. 3 tons was shipped to Britain, intercepted by the British authorities, so they actually found it. This is not just hearsay. And another 2 tons sent to Germany in recent years. So we know that Hezbollah had identified that ammonium nitrate as a source of explosives for IEDs or terror attacks. Okay. Number three, we know from our mutual friend, Jerry, David Wormser,
right,
who used to be at the Pentagon and now has done this really extraordinary, very detailed report for the Center for Security Policy, Frank Gaffney and Fred Fleitz's think tank in Washington. We now know for a fact that there were 3 separate explosions. You can see it when you see the video, but you have to kind of piece it together. David has done a very good analysis of that. The first one looks like it could be fireworks or something, maybe bomb makers who screw something up. The second one sounds like rocket motors going off. And then the third, right, huge one that goes off. Now, my friends who are still involved with the intelligence community, who talk to their colleagues and former colleagues in countries around the world, including some in the Middle East and some in Europe, they call what happened the bozo factor. Hezbollah bomb makers who basically inserted the detonator of the bomb there where they should not have put it. And the rest is tragedy.
Well, look, we're very aware of how they have actually blown themselves up doing an ordnance class. We know it's very possible what they did here was not intended, but it could have some positive outtakes, could it not, when it comes to the people of Lebanon getting a gutful of what Iran has done to their country through Hezbollah.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And so there have been these enormous demonstrations. There are more demonstrations again this morning in Beirut. They've been calling for the resignation of General Aoun. Now, this is interesting. I used to be friends with General Aoun. I used to be good friends with General Aoun. I had him into my house in Washington, D.C., before he was able to go back to Lebanon, when he still represented free Lebanon, a Lebanon free of Syrian influence. Now that he has become president, that's all over. He is the puppet of Iran. He is the puppet of the Islamic State of Iran, alas, and he's working hand in hand with Hezbollah. So the street protests now are calling for Aoun's removal. They're calling for an international investigation of Hezbollah's involvement in this blast. What were they doing in the port area? What were they doing in hangars, in warehouses 19 and 12, which are the two that where the explosions actually took place? And of course, the government is resisting that big time.
Is there, let me ask one more question, because I wanted to ask, do you think, and this is probably a subject matter for another show, but do you think there's any modicum of possibility that Lebanon could ever rise from the rubble and become a normal country again?
The conditions for that happening are so many that I believe in the Lebanese people. I believe in the genius of the Lebanese
people. They're amazing
people. I know too many Lebanese. I mean, they're amazing people. They go all over the world. They leave their country with nothing in their pockets, and they rise like a phoenix and become the wealthiest person yep. here, the wealthiest person there. I mean, they have extraordinary talents and capabilities. It's what is so extraordinary, I guess, it's paradoxical. It's extraordinary that Lebanon still exists.
Right.
And it's extraordinary that the Iranians have been so powerful that they've been able to keep it down.
That's amazing. We only have a couple of more minutes, about 4 minutes, actually. Jerry, why don't you go ahead and ask the next question?
Can Israel breathe a sigh of relief at this bozo explosion in Beirut?
Look, if I were Israel's leaders, I would be doing exactly what I believe they are doing, which is taking a very low profile. This had nothing to do with Israel. We have sympathy for the people of Lebanon. Israel, you know, lit up Tel Aviv with the Lebanese flag. That got a lot of attention around the Middle East, around the Muslim world in the Middle East. Israel, I think, has done this right. They have offered to fly aid into Beirut to help the people who have been affected and their families. And I think that's just right. I would not expect any gloating from Israel, and I haven't seen any, and I think that's exactly the right tone to take. So no sigh of relief, empathy for the victims, which is what they've been showing.
Something that Jerry and I chatted about before you came on was the reason why I know distinctively Israel would not do this is the collateral damage would have kept them from doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's just
absolutely. This is not this. This has no hallmarks of an Israeli operation. Right. Let me tell you the hallmarks of an Israeli operation: the killing of Imad Mughniyeh in Damascus. He was the head of Hezbollah's military wing. He is also the one who was involved in 9/11, who was the liaison with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda between Iran and al-Qaeda. He was killed with explosives in the headrest of his 4x4, and they had him in their gun sights a week or two earlier, along with somebody else. And the CIA, that was part of the operation, said, oh, no, you can't do it. You can't do it. And the Israelis said, well, it's only Qasem Soleimani.
Exactly.
That's a twofer.
That would have been a bonus round.
It would have been a bonus round. But the CIA said, no, we want to keep Qasem Soleimani alive. Now, this was during Obama. I'm sorry, this was at the end of Bush. I take it back. But the CIA was still engaged in operations that one questions today.
But Ken, didn't that bombing occur on the celebration of the anniversary of the revolution at the Iranian embassy in Damascus?
I believe that's correct. It happened on the third anniversary, I think, of Hariri's, it was on Valentine's Day, of Hariri's assassination in 2005, the prime minister.
Correct.
Go ahead, Jerry, what'd you say? I cut you off.
I think after the break, we ought to bring up Hariri because there's been a movement afoot to perhaps release the indictments against shadowy figures involved with his assassination back in 2005.
Right. That's correct.
That'll be interesting. Guys, we have to go to a break, so don't go away. You have myself, Jerry Gordon, and Ken Timmerman, and we are talking about what's going on in the Mideast with the blast, and we're going to be picking up a number of other subjects that we want to get you updated on with what's happening in the Middle East. So stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy to read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
We are in the second segment of the show. I'm Rod Bryant, along with Jerry Gordon, a great producer, and Ken Timmerman, the author of Election Heist. You've got to get the book. It's going to be available. It is available at Ken Timmerman. .com, and you can also get it where else?
You can get it at Amazon, but it's even simpler than that, Rod. Right. All you have to do, Google The Election Heist.
Heist.
Beautiful.
I own it. Ooh, Google The Election Heist.
Yes.
And you'll get there immediately.
That's good. If you never thought it was possible, read this fiction account of the election heist, and it'll make you think twice. Let's get back to the questioning. Jerry, go ahead.
And Sky News reported today the unveiling of a labyrinth of tunnels in the port in Beirut. What do you think was going on there?
Underneath the port, right. Underneath the port. I think, look, Hezbollah has got a long track record of tunneling. They've learned this from the Iranians. They've gotten the equipment from the Iranians. It originally came from Austria and Germany, these tunneling machines. They've used them to tunnel underneath the Israeli border. That was actually one of the things that set off the 2006 war when I was on the front lines with the IDF in northern Israel. They had tunneled across the border and kidnapped soldiers. So it's not a surprise that they would have tunneled under the port of Beirut. And my guess is this was how they were getting explosives out to use for IEDs. They may have been getting rocket motors in because some of the reports David Wormser had mentioned, their reports that they had brought back rockets from Syria into Lebanon and hidden them away in the port in ways that the Israelis did not track them. And that would suggest that they got them into tunnels very quickly. So, I think those are credible reports. They fit the MO of Hezbollah. They fit the MO of the Iranians.
There is also a good indication because of this that there was probably very extensive manufacturing going on with these weapons and explosives, correct?
Yeah, I think that's accurate as well. And, it never should have happened. This was extraordinarily dangerous. The 2,800 tons, not pounds, not ounces, tons of explosives.
Right.
Sitting in that warehouse in the hot sun, the baking sun for how many years now? Almost six or seven years.
What's surprising is that it didn't explode years ago.
Well, there you go. It is surprising it didn't explode years ago. Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that the Lebanese people, as we have said earlier, are an amazing, resilient people, which I'm amazed that they've continued to allow their government to exercise such disregard for the people and the citizenry, and it's really a sad situation.
Well, Rod, it's not a mystery. It is not a mystery. When the Lebanese people, every time they rise up, and they have risen up several times, the Cedars Revolution in 2005, right. Again this past year. Guess what happens? It's Hezbollah and the Iranian thugs that crack down on them, assassinate people, murder people, take them off the streets. So it's not a surprise. The Iranians do the same thing in their own country, which is why the Iranian people have been frustrated every time they rise up, and they have risen up multiple times over the past decade. It is extreme violence used by dictatorial forces that has put down these popular and populist revolutions.
Ken, we had mentioned during one of the breaks the Valentine's Day massacre back in 2005 of then Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. And in the news is a looming set of possible verdicts out of a $700 million UN-sponsored trial. What do you expect out of that?
Well, I mean, we've known about the indictments for quite some time. I happen to know one of the people who was involved in the investigation of this, and it's clear Hezbollah carried out this assassination at the behest of the Syrian government as well as the Iranian government. So they had assistance from both of them at the time in 2005. Everybody knows. People have long suspected that this was the case. I can remember in one of my trips to Lebanon in the end of the aughts. We're now calling them the aughts, right? The 2000s. Must have been 08 or 09, something like that. I arrived the day after at the airport, the day after a prominent Lebanese security official, I believe he was the captain in charge of the investigation for military intelligence, was whacked by Hezbollah on the road from the airport. Along with a guy from Middle East Airways. I was met with, I had to go there under cover of another name. The guy who was picking me up had a sign, Mr. Davidoff. I said, well, they have Davidoff, maybe I'll get past some of the goons. And I was just lucky enough, as I went through customs, these are not the Hezbollah customs officials you have to worry about. I was luckily taken in by Christians at the customs office, probably the last time there was a Christian officer at Customs and Border Patrol in the Beirut airport. Otherwise, I would not be here talking to you today.
If we wanted to flip to Turkey, which is not, is supplying some aid, I guess, in Beirut, how nefarious is their bombing of Christians, Yazidis, and Kurds in northern Iraq, and then going further west in the Mediterranean, what are they doing in Libya?
Yeah, well, so Erdogan has a great ambition to become the caliph. He wants to restructure I don't want to say resurrect because it's using a word which has very positive connotations in my mind.
Right.
He wants to recreate the evil of the Islamic Caliphate, which was disbanded by Ataturk in 1924. And as everybody should remember who's listening to this, it then spawned the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928 with the mission of recreating the caliphate already then. And they've been doing it ever since. So Erdogan wants to recreate the caliphate. He wants to be caliph. And he is bit by bit exercising his influence in what were former Ottoman territories. That's why you see him getting very much involved in Israel, in Gaza with the Palestinian, former Ottoman territories. You see him involved in Syria. Syria was actually, was very much a former Ottoman territory. In fact, it was through Syria that the Turks, between 1915 and 1919, sent the caravans of the deportation through Deir ez-Zor of the Armenian Christians, the Greeks, and the Assyrian Christians. So they would take them from northern Iraq, they'd take from them from Turkey and put them in these caravans, where then the Kurds would go prey on the women and children and the grandparents who were in the caravan. So anyhow, those areas were all part of the Ottoman Empire, and Erdogan's trying to restructure it, recreate it. Now, in Libya, he has a very specific goal, which I am astonished that any large power has allowed him to get away with. He has declared a maritime exclusion zone between Turkey and Libya, Tripoli, Libya, which cuts directly across the export lines of Israeli gas. The Israelis are building pipelines from Leviathan, from Tamar, the gas fields offshore Israel, through Cyprus to get to Europe so they can export gas to Europe. And Turkey is saying, those are our maritime exclusion zones. That is now territorial waters. Well, no, it's not. Nobody recognizes that. The United Nations doesn't recognize that. The U.S. doesn't recognize that. But for the time being, they're getting away with it, and they blocked certain recent drilling off Israel's coast by doing so. So this is a huge power play by Erdogan. We shouldn't be letting him get away with it. And I understand that Donald Trump does not want to get us entangled in foreign wars, in unnecessary foreign wars. He believes that we should be rebuilding this country, and Lord knows there's a lot to do right now to get back to the economy that we had before the China virus came, the China plague came and infected this country. But nevertheless, every now and then a U.S. aircraft carrier, 80,000 tons of diplomacy, works wonders. And it would be great to see one of those carriers off the coast of Libya today.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because as I was thinking, there are a lot of other options beside war that could very well work. But it just seems as if the world community has their arms folded like, he's just a crazy old man and it'll go away. It's a fantasy he's trying to fulfill and it'll be over with soon. And I don't know. It's a big concern when you start thinking of his expansion.
I think from Donald Trump's point of view, Libya is such a failed state. There's nothing
right.
to defend.
Right.
There's nothing to defend in Libya.
Yeah.
General Haftar is being supported by the Russians. Now, can you imagine what the Democrats are going to say if we went and supported General Haftar, who, by the way, people forget this, he's an American citizen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
General Haftar is an American citizen, lived in Virginia for something like 20 years.
I had no idea of
Absolutely.
That.
Not only that, but he was also a CIA operative.
This is what is rumored, Jerry. I cannot confirm or deny.
Or deny. And if you do, you'd probably have to kill us live on the show. So
there you go.
We're gonna go to break, guys. So just hang around. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Matrix, and also thank you guys who are listening and watching on YouTube at Nativ NETIV online. We'll be right back after these very important messages. We'll be right back.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Often copied, but very seldom imitated like us, is Beyond the Matrix. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio, and I've got my co-host Jerry Gordon and Ken Timmerman. Where were we at before the break? Actually, during the break, the conversation was so good, we should have just continued on. But let's go to the most important matter that we want to discuss, that we didn't think as of a few months ago there could ever be possibility that the election could be heisted, could be rigged, or could cause a problem with our electoral system. And you've written an interesting fiction, and all the characters in the book are fictional characters. Your research is not fiction. You've done actual research. Can you tell us about the book, and why do you think that everybody should get a hold of this book and read it?
Well, just to start with, if you're worried about the November election, get this book.
Exactly.
It is like body armor. This is what's going to prepare you for what could happen, and I believe what will happen unless enough people understand the risks and the vulnerabilities and understand also the playbook of the Democrats. We are now in a situation where the Democrats are openly saying, whatever it takes. We are going to win in 2020, whatever it takes. We have to do it. We cannot imagine four more years of Donald Trump. And they will do whatever it takes. In my book, which, by the way, I delivered to the publisher the early draft in November, okay? In the book, I've got scenes of Antifa going down Fifth Avenue, smashing Trump Tower and killing two cops, all right? That happened 6 months, 7 months after I wrote them in the book.
I just hope they're not using that as a playbook.
Well, no, but the book wasn't released.
Oh, okay, there you go.
All right. Now, number one. And number two, the idea of a playbook. Look, all of the stuff that's in this book, I guarantee you there are no secrets from the Democrats who are working on election security. They know all about this. Unfortunately, our side is not very well prepared. So I wrote this book so people would be prepared. Forewarned is forearmed. This is your body armor for November. You've got to understand what the threats are. And plus, you're going to have just a great time reading the book. It's a hell of a good read, right, Jerry? How fast did you read
it? It is superb. This is the fastest read of all the fiction works I have seen you produce. When I can sit down for 4 hours and go through 210 pages and come away blown away.
I had a lot of fun writing the book too. And yeah. I got to say, so the impetus for the book, I was a Republican nominee for Congress in Maryland in 2012. And yes, some of the scenes in the book take place in that congressional district, which of course I know like the back of my hand. So, you know, I take you on the places where debates happen, the places where different meetings happen, where my main character, who is a wealthy Hispanic media star, the Republican nominee for Congress in that district against an entrenched Democrat who has always won his elections without breaking a sweat because he had all these lobbies behind him and because it was a Democrat district. Finally, he's being challenged. And so one of the scenes early in the book is when they're at a kind of local fair in Wheaton, Maryland, which is I call it the Barrio, right? The Barrio, right? It is the heart of the Hispanic immigrant area in Montgomery County, close to Washington, D.C. And so Hugh McKenzie, the congressman, is there. You know, he said, okay, I guess I got to get up here and give my little speech. Yes, how wonderful is our diversity, yada, yada, yada. And he goes on and does this. And as he's going, he hears this kind of funny sound out in the distance. Sounds, you know, like a mariachi band or something. And it's kind of waving towards him. And he sees this wave at the back of the tent. There's this giant tent. He can't figure it is what it is. And so he kind of goes on and plods along in his dull little speech. And finally, he sees what it is. And it's his opponent, Nelson Aguiar, with the mariachi band. And they've all got these red shirts on. And Aguiar is there in a beautiful suit. And he says, and the guy's not even breaking a sweat, and it's August. He says, I better get out of here before I embarrass myself. And his campaign manager says, yeah, you already have.
Right, right. Let me ask go ahead.
One of the episodes in the book that's pretty telling is the exchange with a number of media guys and the revelations that the Republican candidate was in all places, Sderot in Israel,
right,
in a famous conflict.
Right.
And the congressman he's opposing is a guy who signed off on some of the most anti-Israel behavior you imaginable.
Right. And claims that, you know, he's in a Jewish district and the Jews support him, right?
Yes,
and
that's correct. Support him.
Yeah. Right. And so again, I bring this up. There's a scene in a debate, and the congressman can't understand his opponent, the Republican, is kind of going over time, and he doesn't understand it. And he says, oh, well, I'm telling this story. Do you want to hear the rest of the story? And everybody says, yeah, we want to hear the rest of the story about Sderot, you know, and the battle right. scene, because he was a war correspondent as well for TV, right? He was a TV star.
Right.
And so he's telling this story, and he gets right to 20 seconds before the end of his time, and he says, and while I was there, you know, there were some people who were accusing Israel of war crime.
Correct.
Such as my opponent. And he said, perhaps in his time, he'd like to explain to you why he accused Israel of war crime. Bang.
That's
kind of fun. It's a lot of fun. You know, they're fun scenes. And I think people are going to enjoy reading the book as well as learning all about the Democrats' playbook to steal the election.
So, Ken, I have an important question to ask. You've done some research. Obviously, you did research into the viability of something like this happening. I know that a lot of people are kvetching and complaining that, well, we don't want paper ballots because they could be, you know, they could be modified, et cetera, et cetera. Some corruption could happen with it. But it's more than just paper ballots. We're talking about the whole electronic system.
Well, actually, so I've done about 8 years of research, and in my own election in 2012, we encountered the old electronic touchscreen machines.
Yep.
Where people would vote Romney and it would turn out Obama. They'd go back to the election. Wait a second, I voted Romney and it shows Obama. Oh, well, let's reset it and try it again. Votes Romney, it gets to Obama. And this happened again and again and again. And there were many other problems with those electronic voting machines. Well, once I started to investigate that, it turns out that the defaults, the vulnerability to those machines have been known for over a decade before I ran for Congress in 2012. And they're still being used all across the United States, some as the main voting system. But in Florida, for example, which has gone to paper ballots, and I spent a lot of time recently with some of our supervisors of elections here looking into how the system works now, but Florida still uses them for disabled voters or people who cannot read. So they will speak the ballot to them in Spanish or something else. So those systems still exist with all of the vulnerabilities they had then. But the big, big news and the big revelation in the election heist is the vulnerability of paper ballots. Now, it's a bit different from what you were saying, Ron. People have actually wanted to move to paper ballots, thinking that that is more secure because if you ever happen to have a recount, you have the ballots and you can recount them. Okay, that's the idea. You can physically recount the ballots. What I discovered in my research is that the ballots, in fact, are never physically counted. Your paper ballots are not counted. What happens is you put your ballot into a scanner, and ta-da, the scanner creates a ballot image, a PDF. and it is the ballot image that is then counted. And so, as you'll see, part of the plot of the election heist is how the other side infiltrates behind the VPN, behind the air-gapped machines, and all these really high-tech security features that the supervisors of elections are priding themselves on having set up. And yet, the other side infiltrates all that, inserts a software bomb, and basically flips the switch. I call it the secret switch. They flip the switch and change the votes. So instead of Trump plus three, it's Biden plus four.
That is very interesting. Jerry, go ahead.
Isn't there a false flag operation that I read about in this thing?
There are many different kinds of operations. I've used many different versions of voter fraud. There's you're going to learn about absentee voter fraud, about ballot harvesting, which are big things now in the news. Those exist. You're going to see how Antifa is used by the Democrats as part of their playbook to cause chaos and confusion. I've also gone into there's a play-by-play of election night, which is really tremendous. It's really a lot of fun to read because you really feel like you're there, you know, and they don't know which way it's going. Is he going to get Pennsylvania? Is he not going to get Pennsylvania? Oh my God, where's Michigan going? Florida. Of course, it all comes down to Florida in the end. And then the Florida recount goes on for a couple of weeks. And you see, all of this is I've gone into the election laws and seen, you know, just how far they can push it. And the Democrats will try to create so much chaos that they have to certify the fake results from election night. And you'll see how we just managed to get out of that by the skin of our teeth.
Spoiler alerts. We don't want any spoilers.
I'm not going to give you the spoiler, but there was a false flag, and the false flag is, but I don't want to go into detail there because that is a spoiler alert. The false flag is how they get into the election database and how they insert the software. And you'll see I have run this by a lot of computer experts, a lot of hackers, people even in government who explained to me that they would do it.
Well, look, guys, if you want to get this book, and you should, you can go to kentimmerman.com, one word, or you can go to electionheist.com is another place.
No, you just Google. Just Google election heist.
Right.
And you'll find it. You'll find the book.
Excellent.
Amazon.
And until next week at this same time, we will chat with you later. Take care. God bless. And have a wonderful day.
Hello. Yep.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.